It's about learning. People will come when they come. We're going to have a small class anyway, because Ari and Patricia went to their daughter's wedding. So.
Oh,
wow. Exactly. Anna Bekoa, Gedulat Yamincha, Tatir, Sarurah, Aleph Bekimel Yutah Tzadik. These six letters have a gematria of 506, which is the same gematria as the phrase Ahavat Hina, unconditional love. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Kacharenu Nora Kufrei Shayim Sintet. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, Kra, which means to tear up, and Satan, which is the name of the opposing force, the negative system. Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kivavat Shamre Nun Gimel Dalet Yudkav Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet is a sequence that has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a healing sequence that allows us to take our any part of our body that needs healing back to its stem cell state, where it will be cleansed, where it will be healed, where it will be rejuvenated, and then return it to the body in its newly recreated pristine state, where it will again do its job as it was created to do, perfectly. Barchem tacharem rachamei sidkatcha tamigalem betetresh tzadi tachimah. The letters of the month of Av are the Kaf that created the planet we call the Sun, and the Tet that created the constellation Aryeh, the lion. The Kaf and the Tet together have a gematria of 29. But when we add a kolel for the unity of the two letters, it becomes 30. And 30 represents the lamed, the reaching forward to the Creator, because it's the only letter that rises above the line on the Torah scroll. Chasin kadosh biro tufa na'el adata et kuf bet tet nunayim. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah Hod and its essence of thankfulness and appreciation. Yachid ge'e Lamcha p'nei zokrei kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Yesod, the foundation stone. And it's also connecting to the idea of creation, creativity, as well as to the sexual energy of creation. Shavatenu kabel ushmati akatenu yodea talumot shinkufav sadiyutah. This sequence connects to the Sefirah of Malchut. But we learn from these six letters, the first two letters of a gematria of 400. 400 represents four worlds times 10 sephirot within 10 sephirot. 400 represents completion, and ultimately completion leads to perfection. The four letters the other four letters have a gematria of 506, just like the first verse, and connects us to the phrase Ahavatino, unconditional love. And we learn from this that the path to completion, the path to perfection, is by injecting unconditional love at every step in the process. And the eighth verse, we say in a whisper, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Le'olam Vayed. A reading from the Zohar, from the prologue to the Zohar, from section 12, titled The Donkey Driver. And we're reading verse 74. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kananeh Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kananeh. Rabbi Elazar Hawa Azil Lemecheme Le Rabbi Yosei Be Rabbi Shimon Ben Lekonya Lekuna Amoyi Be Rabbi Abba Behadeya Wahawata Ein Had Gavra Avat Raihu Amar Rabbi Abba Niftach Inchein Dioraita Dehashata Veidana Hu Leitakana Earchan. Rabbi Elazar was on his way to visit his father-in-law, Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Shimon, who was the son of Lakuna, accompanied by Rabbi Abba. Another man was leading their donkeys and walking behind them. Rabbi Abba said, "Let us start a discussion on the Torah, as the time and place are propitious and can help us complete our journey." So, is that a spiritual journey or a physical journey?
Taking time to do spiritual
work. Well, studying Torah is spiritual work.
Yeah.
But did that take place in the physical world, or did it take place in a dream-like level?
I think they probably had the Torah memorized, whereas your words would probably take place if they walked.
The reason I'm asking the question is so that you understand. The Zohar is described as the inner essence of the Torah. Everything has a body, and everything has a soul. The written scroll is the body. What's the inner essence? That's the Zohar. So when you're hearing words like journey or walking with donkeys, these are code words. Donkey is the Hebrew word chamor. Chamor means physicality. Journey. We read this past Shabbat, the 42 journeys that the Jewish people took in the desert. But it wasn't journeys, it was locations. They made stops. But they're called journeys. And we need to understand what does a journey mean spiritually. It means a level of consciousness. And each of those 42 journeys was a cleansing mechanism for the Jewish people who came out of slavery and were not ready to go into the land in the second year. That's why the spies or the tourists made their mistake. And it was decreed that we had to walk another 38 years. That walking was journeys. That walking was levels of consciousness. It's just a different understanding to what the Western world perceives as the Holy Bible. They read the Holy Bible literally. Sometimes they will go in a little bit deeper and talk about the next level up, which is called allegory. But they never get to the level of drash, and they never get to the level of the sod. And that's the mistake. The Zohar is very clear. in more than one place, it says if you read the Bible literally, you're a fool. And in other places, even worse than calling people a fool. Now, I'm not calling anybody a fool. And I'm not saying the Zohar is calling people a fool. Those are the words. But what is the real spiritual meaning? It's not that people are fools, but people do foolish actions. It's easy to understand the Bible literally. We all know the story, you should not lie with a man like you do a woman. And the church has created that and told us that. You're more than welcome. Please pull up a chair.
There's one chair open here.
The church has defined that as homosexuality is an incorrect action. But when you look at the halakha on the deeper level, there's a meaning that says, there's not a meaning, but there's a teaching that says there's no extra words and there's no extra letters in the written Torah. So why is it expressed? Instead of saying, don't lie with a man, it says, do not lie with a man like a woman. It's to understand, and the halakha follows this. All it's saying is that anal intercourse is a negative action. But whatever two people do in the sanctity of their marriage, whatever they do behind closed doors is appropriate for them. And it's not anybody else's business. But that's not what the church taught. And that's where the Western world gets its influences. And this is the mistake that most of the Western world follows. Feel free to join us. So this is the 11th class on the of our basic class in Kabbalah. And I see we have new people.
I know. I just saw a notice this week, and it's slow.
Well, I'm sorry for that, but you're more than welcome.
Thank you. I'm very curious about it.
We'll explain as we go along.
Okay, what we missed?
Well, what you missed, you can't make up 10 weeks in a half hour, so.
Definitely.
But, you know, it's roughly 10 hours of study.
Right.
But I can tell you, if you're used to the Internet,
mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you where to go to find these classes, and you can follow them yourself. And you're more than welcome to come back. Although next Sunday,
there's something else.
We have the Tisha B'Av event, so we won't have a class per se, but we will have that event.
Where is that?
It'll be on the second floor so that we can use the television. And it starts at 1 o'clock. Yes, and it'll be longer than a normal hour. It's going to be more like 2 or 3 hours.
More different discussions every hour.
There'll be different things that we'll be doing, but it's in a sequence.
Right.
Without going into what Tisha B'Av is, because we'll do that next week. But today's class is on reincarnation. And we start out with the understanding. Reincarnation is a very central tenet concealed within traditional Judaism. But it is very much a central part, along with two other concealed aspects. One is astrology, Hebrew astrology, and the other is meditation. Now, these are tools that are not discussed in traditional Judaism per se. They're becoming more and more discussed as Kabbalah becomes more aware and more involved with the world. But if anybody has a question about where reincarnation is taught in the written Torah, I'll be happy to explain it. You may be familiar with the first of the Esther Dibrot, which starts out, I am the Lord your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. And then there's a second Esther Dibrot, which is, do not blaspheme the name of God. But between that first sentence and the one about blasphemy, there's a whole bunch of words talking about that the sins of the father will be visited on the children up to three or four generations. You may be familiar with that. Well, let me explain it to you. In Deuteronomy, there's a verse that says that no man, no person, is judged for the sins of another. And the converse of that is no man can take on the sins of another. But essentially, how do you reconcile the statement of the Torah that the sins of the father will be visited on the children, and this same verse saying that no man will be judged who will take on the sins of another? And there's only one way to reconcile those two, at least in my opinion and the opinion of the Kabbalists. The word children means your next life. The sins of the father, the first generation, the first incarnation, will be visited on your next reincarnation up to three or four times. And we learn in reincarnation, in the advanced courses, we learn that three or four times means that each person is given an opportunity to achieve their tikkun in a lifetime. And yet most of us don't complete that in one lifetime. So we come back, we're reincarnated up to three or four times. But then what happens? We split into six components, six people. Some of us achieve their tikkun in those three or four times. They don't have to come back. So the population should go down if that were true. But when we split into six components for those who don't achieve it, we have an increase in population. And that's the explanation that the Kabbalists give us. Because six represents the six sephirot of the heavens. There are 10 sephirot. When creation happened, six of those 10 collapsed into darkness. Those six is where they come to the conclusion that it's six. I could go into a lot more detail on it, but you'll find it confusing because the vocabulary is not well understood. But as you learn the tree of life, which consists of the 10 sephirot, or if you look at the Mogen David, the Star of David, which consists of six points, with the middle being its seventh. And there's a difference between the physical world, the seventh, Malchut, which is spoken of as being female, receiving, and the six heavens, seven heavens truly, which relate to sharing. And they are considered male. So there's a lot of understanding that you can't really absorb in a basic class. But I do an advanced reincarnation class, literally reading from the book called Share Gilgulim. Share means the gates, and Gilgulim means wheels, but it really also means reincarnation, because reincarnation is a cycle. It's a wheel, the wheel of life. You go round and round. You go out of this world, you come back into this world, as the wheel turns.
You're not forever, just 6 times.
No. Three or four times if you don't achieve your tikkun. If you do, you go to the Garden of Eden and wait for the rest of us. Because every human being must return having achieved their tikkun. And if even one person doesn't achieve their tikkun, we're going to wait for that person in the Garden of Eden. And that's what's been going on for the last 5,700 years.
How many people are now in the Garden of Eden?
At the time of the destruction of the temple, Rabbi Shimon in the Zohar tells us that about half of the 600,000 Jewish males who were counted as part of the army, so to speak, half of them had completed their tikkun. And when the male completes their tikkun, the female also completes her tikkun because she completes it earlier than we do. Please.
Is this only Jewish?
No. What is misunderstood, when the Bible was given, well, let me say the Old Testament, for lack of a better term, was given to the Jewish nation at Mount Sinai, every potentially Jewish soul was at that moment, some living and some just spirits that were there receiving the Torah, being given the gift of the Torah. But at that exact same moment, the Torah was given to all 70 nations. All of humanity was given the Bible, was given the Torah. The Jewish people are given a particular role in guarding the Bible. But the other nations have the responsibility of the 7 Noahide laws, the 7 mitzvot of the Noahide, and which is almost the same as the 613 specific mitzvot that the Jewish people follow. And any non-Jewish person can choose to accept the 7, and they're called a righteous Gentile. Or they can choose to, if they want to, they can choose to do any or all of the additional mitzvot. And then they're called a specialized righteous, for lack of a better translation.
One other question. This reincarnation, does it only consist of those that were here prior to? And then, well, what about the next? Is there really a next generation?
I'm going to give you a quick history that may be confusing, and I hope not. There was Adam. While Adam was alive, there were two sons, Cain and Abel. They took parts of his soul to motivate their bodies. Because of the sin, they came to correct the sin that he had made, Adam and Eve. They didn't succeed. They made it worse through the murder. So these three are considered the root of the souls. Now, the next 10 generations, starting with Seth and Enosh and on and on to Noah, 10 generations, they were supposed to correct the sin of Adam. Any human being in those 10 generations could have corrected the sin of Adam, but they didn't. And each of them were part of the components of Adam. And they're called root souls. But the generation of the flood, the generation that Noah was the leader of, was a very negative nation, a generation. And before the Noah, man was not able to eat animals. After Noah, we were given permission to eat animals because the negativity of the generation required that they reincarnate into animals in order to realize the way they had behaved. And it's very painful for a human soul to be in an animal. There's no free choice. He's just aware, but without any ability to influence the animal. So we were told to eat animals to help elevate those human souls out of the animal through the death of the animal and the elevation by eating of people. We then have 10 more generations to Abraham, but literally to the Tower of Babel, where the 70 nations were created. And as you see all of these patterns, we're talking about souls continuing to make mistakes, which we call sins, for lack of a better word. And these souls are now the world is growing in population because of the splitting of the six, and so forth. So to answer your question, there's always a new generation, but it's really the same generation in a different environment, a different situation. Are there certain souls that are called new souls? Yes. There are souls that when Adam was about to sin, said, I'm not here. I don't want to deal with this. I'm out of here. And they left Adam. They're few and they're far between. But every once in a while, they reincarnate as a teacher, as a leader, to help us understand and help move the generation forward. The Ari in the 1600s is one of them. Rabbi Shimon, who wrote the Zohar, is one of them around the time just before the destruction of the temple, and so forth. There are many. And some people will even say the man from Nazareth and his teachings are part of that. So there's a lot of different opinions on that.
I want to say that this kind of confuses me.
Okay.
Because Cain and Abel were born before the death.
That's correct.
So, and I don't know about the generation after that. But
he and Eve had Seth,
right,
which was literally the first human. The other three may have been spiritual beings.
Okay. So I'm not understanding if Adam had not died yet, how there was a split before his death.
The answer to that is in the advanced classes. There's a term called Ibur, which means pregnancy. A soul can come into another person to assist them in achieving their tikkun, or to be assisted by allowing them to use the body to do their action, whatever their tikkun is. That's why when we eat an animal, and if there is a soul in a human being that comes into us, that's called an Ibur. And it may be that they're there to assist us in doing a specific action, or it may be that we're lending them our body to do a specific action that is their tikkun. But that's the system. That is how it works. It's called Ibur. It's a form of reincarnation, but it's not that they have to be born into the body. As an Ibur, they can leave if the body is doing a sin. As a reincarnation, you can't leave the body. Whatever the body does, you're responsible. Your soul is responsible as well.
You're never aware.
It's all on an unconscious level. You can read, you can learn about those levels through the meditation tools that we teach in Kabbalah. Yes, you can know what your last lifetime is, but it's not recommended that you go to somebody else to find it out. You learn how to achieve it, how to find that out yourself. That's what we teach.
So it's a mitzvah to eat meat.
It's a mitzvah to eat meat on Shabbat. Because that's the only time you know for certain that the food you're eating might have a soul. But you have a big increase in vegetarians in our generation, correct?
Yes, it's been on somebody that released it.
Because they no longer have the need to elevate a human soul as their tikkun. But if you still have a desire to eat meat, then it is still your tikkun, and on Shabbat it's best to have some meat.
Are they more advanced than vegetarian than meat?
They will tell you that.
Oh, they do. Oh, okay.
They will tell you that. I didn't say it was true.
No.
I said the people who are vegetarians will tell you that. They do not eat meat for various reasons. They don't want to kill animals. They don't want to, you know, all of this.
They eat fish?
Yes, some do and some don't. There are some vegetarians. There are some fruitarians. That do not eat meat, eggs, or fish. just plants.
They come from a chicken. The chicken doesn't die before.
But the chicken is abused in order to have an egg that is eatable. Because if the egg has been inseminated, mm-hmm. it's not appropriate to eat it. It's not kosher to eat an inseminated egg.
Yeah. And is that the way it's done most of the eggs?
Most, all the eggs you'll get at the store will be not inseminated.
No. Oh, so it's the natural.
Well, the female chicken lays eggs.
What about a human being being inseminated to have a child?
What about it?
I mean, so is there something wrong with that?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. It's the greatest revelation of life in the world. What's wrong with it
yeah.
is for a human being to consume a potential life.
Oh, that's okay. But isn't a natural potential life too?
Yes. But there are, why, you need to understand the concept of energy because that's the concept of kashrut. We don't mix milk and meat
right.
because they're two different energies. Not because there's anything wrong with them. It's good to eat milk. It's good to eat meat.
Right.
We were told to eat meat, but not together. Because a human being cannot handle the energy of the two
together.
So the whole understanding, the Torah is a book of energy.
And who wrote it?
Who wrote all what things? The Bible, the Torah, wrote them. But the Zohar explains them. The Kabbalists throughout the generation enhanced that explanation.
It's evolving around since the beginning of time.
Since the Torah was given, and since literally Adam was given the book of Raziel, which is a Kabbalistic text. But it's become corrupted during the generations. So we're not sure what is correct and what isn't. So we're back to the basic level of reincarnation. I hope I've answered your questions.
I mean, I have one. What?
I would expect you to. But the real essence is it's for every human being, and every human being has a different direction. And the Torah is there to help guide people, human beings, to know what their direction is. But it's not easy. It's not simple. Well, it is simple, but it's not easy because if it was easy, it wouldn't be worth eternity. When you correct, you're correcting the mistakes you've made in previous lifetimes, and you're correcting the mistakes that Adam and Eve made. And when you correct that, the result is an eternal life. And if it was easy, would that justify an eternal life? And the answer is no. That's why it's not easy. And you have to search, study, work to find out what you should do. Or the other path, and that's what I will start. There are two ways to achieve your correction. One is through the path of Torah, study, learning what is the Word of God. But it's more than the Word of God. Because the first word in the Esser Dibrot, what most people call the Ten Commandments, is Anochi. And Anochi is an anagram for I am writing my soul to you. The Bible is God's soul, and it's being given to us so that we will know what to do and how to get close to God. That is one path to achieve your correction. And it's a path that eliminates chaos. It's a path that is preferable, in my opinion, and I'm sure you'll agree with me when you hear it, to the second path, which is the path of pain, suffering, and chaos. Either path, you will reach tikkun. You will reach your correction. Pain and suffering and chaos is a way of cleansing yourself, a way of reaching your tikkun. But who needs it?
Right.
It's a longer path. It's a painful path.
Right.
It isn't necessary. The path of Torah is the alternative.
Probably don't choose either path.
You choose it. If you choose to study Torah, you choose it. Otherwise, you go through life experiencing pain, suffering, and chaos.
And why, as opposed to experiencing?
Why don't you? Because you're making a choice to get close to God, as opposed to living a life of materialism, secularism. You're making no effort to get close to God. You're following your own, inner essence, your own desires for what other things would you follow?
Well, religious.
Religious things is not a path of Torah.
Yeah.
There is no word in the Torah that says religion.
Yeah.
There's a modern Hebrew word, dati, that means religion. But the Torah is not a book of religion. And that's getting back to you, the question you asked, is this for just Jewish people? It's not, because it's about spirituality. It's about metaphysical energy.
Like going to temple and all that stuff that we need.
There are reasons to go to temple.
Yeah,
but if you go as a religious reason, you're in a frame of pain, suffering, and chaos. If you go for spiritual reasons, anytime you say, I'm going to temple because I feel good, you're talking about physicality. You're talking about feelings, which are fine, but you're not achieving your tikkun by doing that.
But if you go on Yom Kippur, how does it feel good?
Because Yom Kippur is the day that you can go in and change metaphysically on the DNA level of that year to be an absolutely perfect, happy year. You have that ability on Yom Kippur because you learned through the classes of Kabbalah how to achieve that. Where in the synagogue, in the prayers, where the code words are in those prayers that let you change the DNA. And it has to do with the way the high priests work.
Prostrate on the floor, praying and begging him.
And that's the lack of understanding of Kabbalah.
Oh, okay, so I guess they don't agree with it.
They will agree with it if they learn it. But they're not taught it. They're taught the Talmud. And the Talmud is answering questions. How to do this? The Zohar is answering questions. Why you do that?
Oh,
and it's a very, very simple reason. I wear a kippah. A rabbi wears a kippah. By the way, I'm not a rabbi, so let's clarify that at the beginning. I wear a kippah. The rabbi wears a kippah. Is there a difference between us? The answer is yes. He wears a kippah because, generally speaking, he wants to be humble before God and to remember that God is above him. I wear a kippah because my hair draws, and every man's hair and every woman's hair draws metaphysical energy. It's an antenna for metaphysical energy. And the only way I can reveal that energy in a balanced way is to not let it just draw, but conceal certain portions of it. That's called binding by striking, the fifth and sixth classes of the basic class. You'll come to understand it if you want to study, but that's the choice that people make. Now,
it
is opposite, because what is the rabbi's job? To make people feel good. But you didn't come into this world to feel good. You came into this world to correct yourself. You shouldn't be miserable. God doesn't want you to be miserable.
But only if you do that, what he wants.
No, whatever you do that is right for your soul, you will correct yourself. It's called intuition and learning how to use your intuition properly.
But you make the wrong choice. Your intuition goes off.
You end up with chaos in your life. But you don't have to. And there are people who live very happy, Yes, deal with lies. Not everybody has misery. But it's those who people who study Torah that have less misery. And that's all I can say. It's not something I prove. One of the laws, not the laws, but one of the rules in my classes, never to believe a word I say. Don't believe me. But please try what I say and see if it works for you. Prove it to yourself. It's either true for you or it's not. And I've taught a lot of people in a lot of different cities. I traveled every 3 or 4 months for the last 7 years, 6, 7 years, to a different city, meeting different people, teaching groups like this. And what did I do? Don't believe me, but please try it. And I've never had anybody say, it's not for me. I've had many people say, it works, but it's too hard. I don't want to do it. And that's what the free choice is all about. Try it, see if it works, and you'll find that it does. And then you decide whether you want to continue with it. The main issue.
I mean, you can go to church.
Absolutely. This is just enhancing. This is enhancing every person's life, whatever choice they make of the spiritual path they wish to follow. In reality, there are 7 billion spiritual paths, one for each human being. Each one has their own path to follow. Now that we group those paths into groups called nations, but some nations have a religion. Some nations have another religion.
What happens to those people?
They follow their path, and if they learn Kabbalah, it enhances their path. It makes their path shorter.
Now, you mentioned that some people say it's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it too hard? It's too hard because they have to separate themselves from...
No, it's too hard because they choose not wanting to give up materiality.
They have to give up everything?
No. You don't have to give up anything. You just have to work on yourself. Do you get angry? Do you get upset? Do you get... are you judgmental of other people and you look at them and see them doing something? The Kabbalah teaches a very different path. If you see something in the other person and you want to say they're doing something wrong, it's really because it's that same thing they're doing wrong is within you. And Kabbalah teaches you to find that thing in you and tear it out by its root. And that's painful. And that's what makes it too hard.
So
that doesn't mean it's impossible. You don't repress.
No, I mean, how do you tear it out?
Well, each attribute has to be done, looked at individually.
Yeah,
there's no general. Yeah, literally. Literally, I used to get angry. I don't get angry anymore.
Well, that's amazing.
I tore it out of myself by its root.
And
it was a gift to be able to do that.
And you never get angry.
Last time I got angry, I was 12. I'm joking. I was actually 16. It was 6 years ago. It was the last time I got angry.
Now, if you see a person doing something that you consider incorrect, wrong, sinful, and you choose not to associate with that individual, are you saying that's wrong?
I'm not saying that's wrong. That's a choice that you've made. But if I said to you, that person that's bothering you, that why are they bothering you? Because they're doing something sinful in your culture. Wait a second. In your culture, you've defined what that action is sinful. Does the Muslim world define that as sinful? Maybe not. But our culture, the Western culture, dictates that. We've absorbed that.
Okay.
But now let me follow and clarify it. So now you see that person doing that. And the reality is the reason you're upset by that person, not the action, but by that person, the same sparks of your soul captured from you. And you have sparks of their soul captured from them. And if you bring them closer and work with them, you will find that your soul sparks transfer in the right way. That is the tikkun that you may have with that person. And when it's accomplished, you will not be angry with them, and they will not be angry with you. You'll be very close. Or they'll move apart on their own, and you won't have to worry about deciding, let's stay away from them.
Somebody that's something so famous, why is the man who knew it? Why can't you object to what they do?
Because they have sparks in my soul, and the only way I can get them is by bringing them close.
And that's going to change them?
Yes, it will change them.
That I have to do right here. That I have
to do. Well, let's continue with the subject today.
Okay.
We're talking about reincarnation. And the easiest way to understand reincarnation is to ask the question, why do people die? No. They die because for three reasons. But before I give you those three reasons, I want to say very clearly. We live in a generation after the year 2000. That people no longer have to die. They need to do their spiritual work. They need to struggle, find out, and heal themselves, and make tikkun, but people no longer have to die. Given that statement and not having to prove that statement at this point, why do people die? And people still continue to die, primarily because they don't know that they don't have to, or because the pain is so severe that they choose to. There are three reasons why people die. When you come into this world, you're born, you are given a certain amount of years to live. The Bible, the Torah says 120 years. The Kabbalists of this generation tell us we're up to 190 years. When I was 5 years old, I told my mother I was going to live at least 300 more years. Whatever the amount is, each person is given a certain number of years. As a child, I had an innate connection to whatever. I lost it, and then I've regained it. Each person is given a certain number of years. We're starting to approach people living 120 years. There's a woman, the oldest woman in the world right now is 118. And Bezrat Hashem, she will prove the 120 years false. But we'll see. The people die because they've used up their years. Now, when you make a sin, you're losing life force energy. You're losing years of that period of time you were given. If we use 120 as a discussion, you make a sin, you're losing a month. You make a deeper sin, you're losing a week, or you'll be losing 10 years. Whatever it is, that's you've lost it. And when you've used up your time, you die. That's one of the reasons. What happens after you die is a court. An evaluation, not a court like our physical courts, but a court that is what is the best for this soul to achieve its tikkun. Is it better to go to hell and be cleansed and then to the Garden of Eden and be complete? Or is it better to come back into this world and do the cleansing in this world? And each soul gets judged in that way. So some people reincarnate, some people go to hell and get cleansed. End of discussion. One reason why you die is you've used up your years. A second reason you die. Is that you've completed your tikkun. Every human being can complete their tikkun in 1 year. Nobody does it in 1 year. Most don't even do it in a lifetime. But whenever you've completed your tikkun, there is no longer a reason for you to be in this world. All it's a waste. There's no reason for it. Go to the Garden of Eden. And so that person dies. I'm sorry? Cocoon means correction. T-I-K-U-N-E. Yes. And it means correction.
What happened to innocent children, Dodgy?
You see them as innocent children, and I see them as a string of souls, and what they did in their last lifetime was horrible.
So that's why they're taken as children?
Yes.
But if someone is carrying the fetus, so they decide they don't want to be born that fetus, that child, they don't. Right.
I don't understand the question.
In other words, I believe, yeah.
Somebody's carrying a fetus.
Right, a soul, and then sometimes that soul decides they don't want to be born, even though can pick out those parents.
No, that soul goes into the baby, into the fetus, and it has a cocoon to live so many days in the fetus. That is its cocoon, and it's time to leave. So the baby dies, the fetus is a miscarriage. That's the cause, but it's all related to cocoon.
And can they pick your parents?
You choose your parents. You choose the family you're born into because they are the best people to teach you your life lessons for your cocoon. And the siblings you have are for that purpose up until the age of 20, which we'll get into in a bit.
I know I'm getting this confused, but sometimes
it is confusing because we're jumping around with questions.
We'll have a parent.
Yes.
And then after that, they have a living child.
Yes. Yes, but it's two different souls.
Two different souls, two different,
each soul has their own cocoon. One soul was a righteous soul, but just needed so many years in the protection of the womb. So many days in the protection of the womb, but that's a physical life. By living that in the protection of the womb, they achieved the completion of their tikkun. And so there was no reason for that baby to be born. Now, the pain that the parents feel on having a miscarriage, that's their tikkun. So there's an interrelationship between what the child does and what the parents do. But now somebody else, the next child after the miscarriage, I happen to be one of those. My mother had two miscarriages before I was born.
Yeah.
I come in and my tikkun is to live. Mm-hmm. My tikkun is to go through this life. My tikkun is to teach this material to people because hopefully they'll learn and choose to study Torah and improve their lives.
So the ones that choose not to, okay, and
decide
to be born, okay, or not, live, then what are they learning from just being in the womb and that
coming out? They're learning physicality and the pain of physicality. You think the baby is not feeling pain? Being in the soul isn't feeling pain, having to be in a physical body and a mother? Yes, it's protected by the placenta and then the water and all of the womb, but it's still painful for a soul to be in the body. Why do you think you sleep? You go to sleep, not for the body. The body stays active. You go to sleep. Your soul leaves the body because it needs to be cleansed. Yes.
It travels.
It travels to
go.
Goes up to heaven to be cleansed.
When you wake up.
Correct.
Okay, and then the third child.
I'm sorry.
The third child. I'm adding another child.
Okay.
So, it could be a new soul.
It could be, but if it was a new soul, it would tend to live past adulthood. If you're talking about a child who dies from cancer at this 6-year-old or 5-year-old, that child, that is their tikkun. And it's the tikkun of the parents to experience that pain and loss. Yes, we all feel that pain, and it's horrible. But it's tikkun, it's correction, and it's a good thing in the sense that the child has achieved its tikkun. But people are not taught that. People are saying, I'm in charge of this child. And you know, the child left, the child died. I don't understand this, but the Kabbalah gives you an understanding. Whether you accept it or not, it's another thing. And I hope I'm not causing pain to anybody by having this discussion.
Sure.
If somebody's lost a child, it's very, very, it's difficult to accept. The third reason that people die.
Before we move on,
yes.
One other question. With this being true, why are there hospitals that people developing medication and different things to keep people at home? Because we don't know.
Because you don't know. You don't know how to heal yourself. So you go to a doctor, and the Torah tells us to go to the doctor because most people don't know how to heal themselves.
So if you get well, it was meant to be.
Correct.
Otherwise, you wouldn't get well.
If you can, if you go to class 5 and 6,
okay.
You learn about
okay.
Where is free choice and where is the movie where your life, there's everything's preordained.
That's what I believe.
So everything is preordained, but there is free choice. And how do you balance those statements? We don't have time to go into now. These people have already gotten that.
We're waiting for the third reason.
The third reason.
Thank you.
Is God's mercy. What is God's mercy? It comes in the story of Bathsheba and King David. It explains it. King David and Bathsheba were soulmates from the moment of creation. When he came into the world, a number of years later, she came into the world. But they are soul, because a soul is defined as male and female in unity. Adam was created, Adam and Chava, male and female, back to back. That is the soul. But in our generations, the soul splits. And there's a number of years difference between them. When a person is ready for their soulmates, when it's time for them to come together, if they were married, what do? They've already married somebody, but they're bound to be married to this other person. Well, in Judaism, you have a mitzvah called a divorce. You didn't know it was a mitzvah, did you? It's a mitzvah. You're allowed to divorce, and there are many explanations for it, but one of them is exactly this situation with Bathsheba, who was married to the Hittite, and King David, and they knew that they belonged together. But the Hittite had divorced her when he went to war. Now, he didn't have to die in the war. But if he had come back, he would have been remarried to Bathsheba. While he was at war, they were divorced. So there was no adultery. But the bottom line issue is, King David felt guilty about what he had done, writing a letter telling him to put him in the front lines. But he needed to die, because he would not have given Bathsheba a divorce. But the question is, why wouldn't he give a divorce? It's a mitzvah. Because the pain that the Hittite would have felt to see the woman that he loved be with another man, that pain would have been so severe and terrible that in God's mercy he said, let's take you out of the world. We'll reincarnate you to spare him the pain. Those are the three times. Third reason why
sometimes
people die. Correct. Because it's not any of your fault that these two people are soulmates,
right.
And you got in the middle of them because he wasn't ready or she wasn't ready until that experience takes place. Now, just quickly, there are 5 signs of soulmates. And everybody always asks, how do you know if you're married to your soulmate or whatever? But there are 5 signs of a soul. One is that you have complementary astrological signs. Fire signs go with air signs. Water signs go with earth signs. That's generally. But you have to look at the whole chart, not just one or the other. But you can see in the astrological chart, in the horoscope, but God forbid, it's called a horoscope, you can see who is the soulmate. I'll give you an example. I was in Salt Lake City and I met a woman. And my sun sign is Sagittarius, her moon sign is Sagittarius. My moon sign is Gemini, her sun sign is Gemini. And we both have rising signs as Aquarius. There's a pretty good indication that there's a reason why we're together or not together, because she lives in Salt Lake and I live here now. You know, but those are all part of our tikkun. So you have complementary signs astrologically. Number two, you have to cross an ocean. Now, it's not an ocean in the physical sense. In her particular case, she was born Mormon, and she had to convert to be a Jew. That's crossing an ocean. In another case, it could be that they grew up right next to each other, but they never thought of each other in terms of somebody they could date, that they would consider a mate. And all of a sudden, one day they wake up, they come back from college, they come back from wherever, and they're, wait a second, what happened to her? All of a sudden, this is a possible mate. That's crossing an ocean. And then there's literally somebody born in Europe or in Asia might come to America, and that's their soulmate.
But I think you know. Your soul knows when it meets its counterpart. I believe it.
I'm just telling you that these are indications.
Yeah.
You don't really know till you have all five signs. That's three. The fourth sign is that the families don't want you to get married. Why not? Because the Satan's job is to lengthen the process, to make it difficult for you to reveal light, to achieve your tikkun. And marrying a soulmate is one of those weak ways. So Satan is going to enter the consciousness of the family members. You don't want this one. Let's keep them apart. And they get angry. They we don't want them married. It's clear. One of the reasons that I'm here and she's there is that her daughters couldn't handle the possibility that we would get married. And she bought into that. And I'm not arguing with her. She is who she is. My daughters didn't accept her either. But I understood the reason behind it. So it didn't bother me. I wasn't going to stop because I knew as soon as we got married, all of that rancor would disappear. Everything would be wonderful. But sometimes it's when the grandchild is conceived. But that's not about to happen with us. You know, we're 67 and 66, so come on. But the bottom line is, you know, when the family is against the relationship, it's telling you it's one of the signs of soulmates. And then, just to make life a little bit more difficult, there's a fifth reason. And the fifth reason is you cannot be sure until after you marry. Because the fifth reason is that you have a spiritual goal together. It may be to bring children. It may be to work in teaching Kabbalah. Maybe whatever it is, you have a joint physical spiritual goal. And your love continues to grow day by day, year by year. as your love grows, after the fact, you learn. You can be certain. You can have the first four signs, but if the love doesn't grow, it's not soulmates. I'm sure we're out of time, but just if there are any other questions before we get out. The first two is compatible astrological signs and crossing an ocean. Number three was that the family didn't like each other.
Yeah.
Okay, then it's the. Yeah, I have it written down, but I can't get access in this location. So it's all written on the website. You can look up.
Okay. What is the website? Yeah, what is
the website is Yeshem, Y-E-S-H. I have it. It's on the card.
Yeah.
I have a smaller card that I can.
Is the website on the card?
Yeah.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah. Everything is there. Here's another card. You can pass this one down, please. And so you have all the information of how to reach me. And please send me your email because these things are recorded, and I forward the recordings to anybody who's interested in receiving them. And I also recommend that you, on the website, the top right corner, it says newsletter. And you can sign up with your email for whatever I send out, which right now is only about once a month. But starting in Elul, which is next month, it'll be every day for about 40 days.
Just the next week, it's always 4 o'clock right here.
Right.
Every Sunday.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, it is.
You want your Bible?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a particular version of the Bible?
Which one do you use?
I use the Holy Spirit.
That's fine. The only issue is about the New Testament versus the Old Testament. We teach from the Old Testament. The New Testament is everything in the New Testament is coming out of the Old Testament. Because the man from Nazareth was a Jewish man. That's what he taught.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Before you leave, I know, have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Because I know what your answer is. So, okay.
You do?
Yes. But I asked for donations for these classes, which are then used for Friday night. We have a community Shabbat dinner that everybody is invited to right here. If you want to donate, I don't have an envelope, but we just put it in the middle, and I'll get it to the people that prepare the foods and all.
Well, I don't have any
food. So when you learn the class on charity and tithing,
the next week the donation is paid by the card.
Whatever we do, it's the donation, but it's all going to go to the same place, which is the Shabbat dinners.
I'm sure
can we know the
answer
I was very surprised by this.
What?
Because the last time you said you gave your donations to one of the public charities.
Well, I do.
Okay, and that's fine. And that's what the answer I expected from you, and I know you had to leave, so I apologize if I offended you.
I made this mistake. Oh, you said the thing. Okay.
You take care. You have a beautiful week. And remember, there's a meditation to keep the craziness of this week away, because this is a very difficult
week.
When's
the meditation? When?
Where?
Yeah,
I gave it to you. It's on the website.
The one that's on the website.
Yeah.
Why did you do another one? Right, yes, I know.
This is the most negative week of the year.
Yeah. And it is.
Do you have to be careful?
Yes.
Why?
By scanning the meditation, which is on the website, it explains why it is the most negative week, and it explains the process of the meditation, and we recommend you use WISE. When you go on the website, there's a white box, I think it says Google in it, but it's a local search engine. And if you type in the number 3 and the word weeks, 3 weeks, the first two links that pop up, one of them is the meditation and the other one is the explanation. So feel free to scan that and work with that.
And you all come on Friday night if you want.
And everybody is welcome.
Right.
And we'll share the choice.
Everybody brings
Lucheva. She was on the tour.
Yeah, she's in 328. I know Sheva.
What's your first name? Is that the first name?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sure I know her, but
you do.
I know
yeah,
her,
she
right?
She just moved in about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were to see Laura.
No, she's relatively new.
I don't want to hear that.
Any other questions?
You're here only a couple of weeks?
Maybe a month.
I moved to
from where?
From where?
Mm-hmm.
I was staying with my daughter for a while.
Yeah. Oh,
what you asked. Just take what you want. Thank you.
I was here before. I was in an apartment on North Side Park.
Oh, okay.
Then I decided I needed a count.
So please send me your email so I can send you the recording. And I'm hanging up the phone.